Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click. All complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Touchdown! I don't believe it!
You're listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game!
A weekly mix of 92.3, the fans' best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Was it his decision, Tone? Good morning.
Oh, we got to get right to the heart of it immediately, Kenny.
You don't want to. It's okay. I think it's depressing for you.
Depressing. 2 years in a row. Last year it was the Ken Dorsey. Was that last year? Do I get my years mixed up? That was the Ken Dorsey offense, but this year it was his offense.
He took it back.
Yeah, but now he's not going to be calling the plays.
I don't think you like talking about this at all. I think what does it matter?
Obviously the ramifications are interesting. Even if it may not, I saw a bunch of people yesterday determining once and for all what this means for Kevin Stefanski and his future. And I'm like, I don't think they're conducting business like that. I know that when we analyze the league and we look at situations, normally when a coach has to give up play calling, that means they're on the hot seat, and this is 2 years in a row. But obviously, the messaging they continue to put out is that, you know, this is all on Jimmy Haslam and they are still paying the price for the Deshaun Watson move. And so everybody's going to be safe from now until eternity. So I don't know how you read any more into it than
that. I think it's wishful thinking by the fans.
It looks terrible.
I think it's wishful thinking by the fans.
It absolutely looks terrible for Stefanski because,
well, yeah, of course.
What does he do well? What can anybody say today in year six? What can you hang your hat on
there's
if you're Kevin
things,
Stefanski?
Well, there's been things he's done well in the past. I just don't know if he does them well anymore. Like, things can get away from him.
Yeah, things change. The league changes.
Yes, management, game management at times. You know, I think there's been times in the past where he's done a pretty good job of taking care of the entire team, managing the game, not just calling plays and trying to get yards and trying to get points. Much to people's chagrin, I have felt that way. But as of right now, you know, when we say hot seat, again, I think it's wishful thinking. I think people believe that there needs to be somebody answering for this. when you're 5-20, there's a yearning for somebody to be held accountable. And for the fans, it feels as if nobody is being held accountable in this moment. That exactly what you said is the worst possible thing for a lot of Browns fans to hear this morning. That none of it really matters. Now, you didn't say it doesn't matter, but in so many ways, it's like, hey, he's announced this before. He didn't get let go before. Everything that they're paying some price, or he's that the owner is paying the price for Deshaun Watson, that they're not going anywhere. I just think that's more of the same to a lot of fans, where these are things that they don't want to hear. They, I think, and it's not an indictment of the fans because you're 5-20 over the last 2 years. Don't take this the wrong way. They want somebody to be held accountable for this. There's a lot of blame going around. And because there's nobody being held accountable for it, it's going to make the fans even more frustrated.
Yeah, I got more of the indications, I was just feeling that if anything, they would just depart with Tommy Rees, and instead they give him the play calling duties. And what is that? What does that even mean? You know me, I'm not Mr. Play Calling guy. I think it's one of the most overrated things that get talked about.
Well, play calling
from fans in general. And I saw, this was so funny yesterday. So the timing was perfect. Yesterday, there was that video against the Dallas Cowboys. Was it on the road where it's a double reverse and it's Odell Beckham throwing the football?
That was COVID year, yeah.
Yeah. And it was awesome. And someone's like, oh, RIP Stefanski's offense. Or this used to be Stefanski's offense. I'm like, it's trick play. We ran two trick plays last week and they were humiliating. Like, what are you looking for? What is the play calling difference going to be with somebody who's never called plays in the NFL?
Yeah, you either have, well, again, people are desperate. They want them to try anything. So when you try, you can run a lot of gadgets and things like that when you have Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. as your one and two. You can do those things because you can trust them. They're great football players.
But Nick Chubb is your running back.
Exactly. But you can't trust them when it's Gage Larvadan. And so when you try it, like, I don't like trying that sort of thing because, and it's exactly what Mike Vrabel said. Like, this could get in the weeds real quickly here. It's exactly what Mike Vrabel says. You got nothing. So once you, like, I didn't take that as a shot at Kevin Stefanski. I took that as a shot at, you guys got nothing. Once you're done with your gadget plays, you don't have enough to beat us straight up. So once you're done with your tricks, now we're just going to line up and beat you.
Do Browns fans think, because the offense isn't changing, right? We all agree on that. So just the order of the calls that you make, that's the difference? Like, think about how silly that really sounds. Like, oh, instead of running the ball on this down, Tommy Rees is going to come in and run a different play on that down or throw a guys, they're,
well, I think that
it's not going to make a difference. Unless the talent is upgraded. Now, I'll say, like, last week, the offensive line before the bye week, the offensive line and pass protection looked the best it's looked all year, and it still didn't mean anything.
Well, the only thing that I could probably think to say is that maybe Tommy Rees has a better grip on getting guys to do what they're more apt to do, or getting guys from point A to B better. Like, if you're asking guys to do things that they're simply not capable of, and you're running the offense, you know, that's on you. You know, you can only do so much. And so if you are asking, it's such a tough thing to, because everything's results-based. The play, I agree with you in principle about the play calling. Let me say that right now. Everything's results-based. Did the play work? Well, they got 5 yards and they got a first down. Okay, it's a great play call. It's a great play call. It could have been a great play call, except if it doesn't get five, why would they call that? Well, you know, it all worked out well until, you know, they actually snapped the ball and my left guard ended up slipping or something like that. I'm not using any specific example. I'm just saying there's so many times where, yeah, it's the right call. It just doesn't get executed because they're allowed to play defense and get ready for you too. So I can understand where he's coming from when it comes to play calling, the overall theory of it. However, there's certain things. When I say it doesn't make sense, I mean something totally different when it doesn't make sense. Things that I would just do differently on certain downs, certain times. That's why the play calling thing, I think it means something to a lot of different people. This would be only towards if there was a successful result, then it's going to look bad on Kevin Stefanski because you can't see what these guys are capable of. But I don't know what they're capable of. I don't think they're capable of much more than what they've shown. Like, I don't think that Tommy Rees is going to unlock Dillon Gabriel and all of a sudden it's going to be an air raid in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, if Dillon Gabriel can't see the field and can't can't, you know, progress, you know, further along the first obvious thing the defense is giving us. And you've seen a lot of that in anybody doing the film study for what the Browns are doing. Like, you just, you have a quarterback who already had limitations, and now you're not even getting the advantage of, you know, his smarts or his experience with all the different games he had played. Like, you're getting none of those advantages, and then he doesn't even really have the mobility that people thought he had. People thought he was just going to take off and be able to run. He doesn't really seem to have that.
Yeah.
So what is it? What is the play, the order of the plays that are going to be called? You guys explain to me why you think that would be. It kind of sounds like the people who said, well, it can't get any worse after Joe Flacco. So they're saying, well, it can't get any worse after Kevin Stefanski's play calls.
No, it can get worse.
You watch.
Oh, it can
you
get
watch.
Worse.
And then what does this mean for the next guy up, the next quarterback up? Like, how do you feel? I'd love to know what the Shador people feel, how they feel about
this. Well, the only thing I'll tell you this.
Like, if you would have told them that, hey, the Cleveland Browns are going to be in total disarray. They're going to be eliminated from everything when your guy finally gets a shot. And then somebody who, I don't know anything. What do you hear about Tommy Rees? I heard he was like an up-and-coming guy in college, but now that he's calling the plays of the NFL, how would the Shador fans have felt about that?
Yeah, but anytime. Well, I told you
that before the year started.
I think that they would have been, if we're just talking about the fans that have dropped in as Shador fans, I think that they'd be surprised. I think any Browns fan would go, yeah, get comfortable. We've been through this many times with many other coaches
before. I think they'd probably be saying, maybe a gap year would serve our boy well. Maybe just taking the year off and restarting this thing next year would feel better.
Can you take a gap year in Canada, or is that does that put too much stink on you? I'm dead serious. I want to know. Can you do that as a quarterback? That might be a viable option for some out there. I'm just saying. I'm just pointing that out. There might be some, like Joey Aguilar in Tennessee. Maybe you want to take a gap year in Canada before you come on back down to the States and see whether or not you can hack it here in the NFL. I'm just throwing it out there, guys. Anyway, I think this can mean multiple things, but because we saw it before, I don't think you can guarantee anything. I can't guarantee that he's on the hot seat. But Daryl, I think Daryl might disagree to some level here because Daryl was on Afternoon Drive. Now, we have Daryl on Mondays at 8:20, but this was obviously made after Daryl was on with us. So Daryl was on Afternoon Drive. And he compared him to Warren Zevon. He says that Kevin is a desperate man.
Desperate move. Last year, it was, I think, Kevin just throwing his hands up and basically saying, hey, y'all wanted Ken Dorsey here, so have at it. This one feels like things are just so bad. Let's try something, anything to shake it up. Not going to bench the quarterback. You can't bench any of the receivers because, quite frankly, that's all you have to work with. And so, well, what can you do to make it look like you're trying to do something here? Okay, we'll give up the play calling. Let's let Tommy Rees go ahead and handle that. So that's what that felt like to me today.
That's what Daryl said about it. Do you have any thought about Daryl saying that he's desperate? Do you think that Kevin is acting desperately?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a level of desperation. This is the one thing he doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to give up his play calls. Like, that's the one thing that he feels like he's made his bones in this league doing. And so, you know, while maybe this will, and this is the argument we tried to make last year, maybe this will allow him in delegating that to focus on all the other things going on during a football game, but it's like, it's year six. Like, you already should be accustomed to being able to handle all the challenges of being a head coach. Be kind of scary to me if all of a sudden this unlocked to Kevin Stefanski that could pay attention to everything else. Like, well, he gets paid a lot of money. He can't already do that.
Well, there's another thought that I have, but I'm going to wait for it maybe for 6:20 because I want to get to some people here in a second. 216-474-0092. Zagura was asked about it yesterday, about what Kevin Stefanski's role is now that he ain't calling plays again.
He's going to have to be that CEO. He's going to have to be that master motivator. He's going to have to spend more time with the defense and say, hey, you know, here's how maybe I would be attacking this, and something to think about if the, you know, the offensive play caller is similar, comes from a similar background. So he's going to have to, you know, be involved in everything, you know, help special teams become a little bit more consistent. All of it. That kind of all falls under the head coach and really kind of, I think, now has more opportunity to focus on in-game management and then outside of games, just more leadership, motivation, accountability, all of those things. And so he's obviously going to still be very involved in the design of, I would think, you know, working collaboratively with Tommy Rees, but it just gives him an opportunity to focus, I think, on every aspect of the ball more than he would when he was still the play caller on game days.
Yeah, if I got to respectfully disagree with Nathan. If he wants to talk about game management and you know, those type of styles, fine. The motivation, he doesn't come off as a motivator to me. The leadership and accountability thing. I mean, these are good things to say, but remember, this was a guy who was a head coach when Jadeveon Clowney had it out with players in the locker room and then continued to be on the football team until December when things really hit the fan. So when it comes to accountability, I got a long memory. I don't know if that really
he doesn't
sticks
really,
with me.
They, I will say, and I've had other just on a very lower level, like high school football coaches, you know, they always can't believe... God, I got one in my ear every day. They can't believe that Stefanski never seems to bench anybody. Like if they run a wrong route or if they make some sort of gaffe. I'm like, do they do that around the NFL? And then I'll watch other NFL games. I do see guys do get kind of taken out. Like they seem to want to avoid at all costs any appearance of, oh, we're disciplining somebody. They don't really ever do that. You notice that. The Browns lose a lot of games, but there's not a ton of discipline that they kind of come out and are forthright about. And if it does happen, you never hear about it because they don't want the media to know.
No.
And it's like, you know, you can sometimes use the media and go public as a way to kind of get after somebody who's not doing what they're supposed to do. Because sometimes in-house stuff doesn't work.
So
sometimes guys need to be shamed and humiliated.
I'm going to tell you what I think of it. And then I'll let you guys stew on it. I think you're probably getting ready for other quarterbacks. I think you have Dylan Gabriel here. I think he wants to get a different set of eyes with Dylan Gabriel. And then I think that, I mean, if you got Tommy Rees, who has been working with the QBs, I know he's a former tight ends coach here, but who has been working with the QBs, I mean, you're getting ready to go into, I think, the young territory there with, as long as Shador's back isn't locked up. I know he didn't practice yesterday, but I think you're getting ready for other guys. It's like, well, you know, Kevin really hasn't worked with him. So you're going to know more about what he's comfortable with the guy who might have been working with him. Has Tommy been working with Shador? Was Tommy working with Dylan Gabriel more than Kevin was? And maybe he's going, you know what? Maybe you're more apt to know what makes him comfortable than I am. Because you've worked with him, you may know him better. Or it is just a Hail Mary move and this guy is days are numbered. 216-474-0092. I'll see where you guys stand on it. What does it mean? Does it mean anything to you? Because it's happened before, and he kept his job after that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On play calling, I'm going to have Tommy call the plays on offense. These are things that I'm always looking at. What can we do better? I have a ton of trust and faith in Tommy. He's more than capable, so excited for him. But bottom line is we have to just get better collectively. Just felt like Tommy is somebody that I believe in. Obviously hired him here a couple years back because I really believe in Tommy as a coach, and he's done everything that we've asked, and I just feel like this is the right time for this.
Early your decision.
Yes.
That was Kevin Stefanski. Moments ago, we heard it here on The Fan, his decision, he's giving up play calling, and he's giving it to Tommy Rees, his offensive coordinator. Second year in a row that Kevin has given up play calling duties to his offensive coordinator. Last year, it cost his offensive coordinator his job, change at the end of the year. This year, hopefully it doesn't cost anybody a job, and it works and it goes well. I'm Jeff Phelps, that's Andy Baskin. Tommy Rees, at the age of 33, is now calling plays.
It'll be interesting to hear what the players have to say about that. I'm interested in what it looks like. I wonder what it means for Sanders and Gabriel. And you know who else is interested?
Tell me.
Daryl Ryder is, too. Get the latest from Browns practice throughout the week right now on our YouTube channel. Daryl Ryder recaps each and every practice and game while featuring the best highlights from coaches and players during media availability as well as on-the-field action. So subscribe to 92.3 The Fan, the YouTube channel that we have right now, the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel. Do it now and get all the latest from Daryl Ryder on the Browns throughout the football season.
So Tommy Rees gets this gig now. Tommy, I just mentioned, is 33. He's in his second year on the Browns staff. Last year, he came in as the tight ends coach and like passing game coordinator type guy. He came here from Alabama and did not have a banjo on his knee, but he did have a pretty good resume. Sorry.
Bad.
Old. Bad reference?
Yeah, thanks. Bad reference.
As the offensive coordinator at Alabama, it was in Nick Saban's last year as head coach. Nick Saban brought him in. But Nick Saban brought in a lot of offensive coordinators. I believe it was six offensive coordinators in Nick's last 8 years. He had six different guys. Tommy Rees replaced Bill O'Brien, former Houston Texans head coach and, of course, assistant with New England and been around Bill and Penn State head coach. He replaced Bill O'Brien as the play caller. And Alabama went 12-2 and averaged 34 points a game. Okay. It was Alabama, big time college football.
You had Nick Saban. He's a smart guy. There's no, I mean, he went to Notre Dame.
Without question.
You know, he's coached at, Northwestern, the Chargers, back to Notre Dame. I mean, you talked about Alabama.
Well, he played college quarterback at Notre Dame.
Yeah. So,
at Alabama, just for argument here, his quarterback was Jalen Milroe, as we recall.
Yeah.
Then the year that he called plays, and he was only there 1 year. Jalen Milroe. His wide receivers were Jermaine Burton, who has shown flashes of being really good with the Cincinnati Bengals, but has also shown, hey, this guy can't get on the field because he's a knucklehead, for lack of a better way of putting it. He's had things that have kept him off the
field. But he's also got a couple good wide receivers ahead of him, too. So.
Yeah, well, yes, but I think he's a good wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Trade deadline, keep that in mind. We're looking for wide receivers on other teams.
You know, give him somebody to be comfortable. You want to give him a whoopee?
Well, he has one. His name's Isaiah Bond.
Yeah.
Isaiah was a wide receiver at Alabama with Tommy Rees. And then Isaiah transferred to Texas, and Tommy Rees came to Cleveland. So can we look for an uptick in Isaiah Bond with a play caller who called plays for him at Alabama? That might be something. Before Rees was at Alabama, he was at Notre Dame as the quarterback coach and offensive coordinator in 3 years, I believe it was, of calling the plays at Notre Dame. And he called him for Brian Kelly, who wanted to hire Rees to go to LSU with him. And instead, Rees stayed at his alma mater, stayed at Notre Dame, and called plays for Marcus Freeman, 31-8 as a play caller at Notre Dame. So he obviously has been successful at good college football programs calling plays. I don't know how much credibility you can put into that. And I say that for this reason. Okay, if you have Nick Saban as your head coach and he's recruiting at Alabama and you don't put up a lot of points, well, then it's your fault, you know?
True. Yes. That's a great point, Jeff. I don't know what to expect. I don't know that things are going to change. I maybe they'll have a little bit of a spark this week. I don't know if this coincides with maybe a quarterback. Maybe they're looking at the quarterbacks a little different, too. Again, Kevin said, we've got to be better. In fact, he says it almost every press conference when they lose. So if he feels like this is going to make them better, well, here's your opportunity.
Yeah.
What happens if it doesn't make them better?
It's interesting because in just some quick double-checking on Reese, I saw one article when he was at Notre Dame and said he was really great at getting the most out of the tight ends and the offensive line. He went to Alabama and said he's really going to emphasize the running game and developing quarterbacks. Okay, so he's really good with tight ends, offensive line, running backs, and quarterbacks. Okay, great.
You know he had a nickname, too.
Tommy?
Turnover Tommy.
Hey! So. Well, he's calling plays.
Yeah, he's not. At least he's not throwing the ball.
Starts on Sunday against the Jets. Nate's in West Salem. Hello, Nate.
Hi, Nate.
Good afternoon, guys. Well, hey, I'm ecstatic about this. This takes care of one aspect of the things we needed fixed. Kevin had to give up play calling. It has nothing to do with Kevin. It's just we needed a different voice. We now have a different voice. We have what I wanted, which is a guy up in a booth looking down at the offense whose sole job is to concentrate on the offense. Now, I'll go buy Kevin a fedora so he can be Tom Landry on the sideline overlooking the whole thing. Now, next thing is, and Jeff, you mentioned this earlier, Barry needs to get talent at the trade deadline. You mentioned that the last time we had talent was when Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham were here, or offensive weapon players.
Yes.
That was before Barry even got here. That means we haven't had a serious, at least passing offensive threat in years now. Barry,
Amari, you'd say Amari Cooper though, wouldn't you, Nate?
Sure. I'll take that on a trade, and that's where he's best. He's not a drafter, he's a trader. So let's find some of the four or five players with the expiring contracts who we're not going to keep anyhow. Let's parlay them into three or four players who are at least lateral moves or better than what we have. So we can try to see what we've got with this offense. I think this is a good move by Kevin. I'm happy he didn't pull his normal stubbornness and decide to keep the play calling. And let's see what Tommy can do. Go Browns.
All right.
You know, Jeff, you said before you don't think he'll ever call plays again.
Nope.
Let me flip the script on this, right? What if this is Kevin just going, look, you guys think it's bad with me calling plays? All right. I accept that. You think it's bad. You think it's me? Okay. I think it's okay. You want to think that? What happens now that if he hands it over to somebody else and it looks exactly the same? So is that not screaming we need more talent?
Oh, well, anybody can look at this offense, and if anybody thinks it has enough talent, they don't know football. I can't argue that blunt.
No, I think you're right.
Since we had Jarvis and Odell, this thing but has been is, lacking is this Kevin for putting wide his hands receiver up? Depth.
Kevin, like, you know, he's just like, he's got the dust from trying to make some bread, some flour on his hand, going, okay, you know what? You don't like the way I'm making the bread? I clean my hands of it. Now, let's see somebody else make the bread with these bad ingredients. Oh, it's not rising for another person either. Maybe it isn't all me. Maybe it's the ingredients we're buying. We can do better than this. We can buy better ingredients.
I think Kevin's history as a play caller shows that it's not him. Though I think that's an interesting point. Sorry, I've watched Kevin.
Was this point the interesting part?
No, that was it. You were dusting off the flour.
Thought that was pretty good for radio on TV.
Though he drove me nuts by not giving the ball to Nick Chubb when they were in the red zone. That's the only thing Kevin has done as a play caller that's really driven me up a wall.
Not using Nick on third down?
No, not using Nick when they were, you know, like first and goal from the 7. He said throwing 3 times.
Yeah.
The heck you doing? Right. So that one drove me nuts. I think overall Kevin has done a good job when he's had talent. When he's been given talent, I think he's been a good play caller. And sorry, guy who orchestrated the greatest show on turf thinks the same thing.
Yeah,
not more so, Mike Martz.
Yeah.
And
heard him say it.
I could think this, Andy. If the offense stinks with Tommy Reese calling plays, then yes, your point is valid. And it might put Kevin in a different light with ownership. if there was any thought that, good Lord, Kevin's calling these plays, the offense has stunk 2 years in a row, we need a new head coach. If the offense stinks 2 years in a row and you've had three different guys calling the plays, three.
Right.
Then it's clearly not the play caller, is it?
Because
Tommy Reese was good in college.
Yeah.
Dorsey has had a good track record throughout most of his NFL career as a coach. You know, he's not a nincompoop.
No, you're right. He's not. I don't think he is.
So, I mean, three guys. Tommy Reese is considered a young star in the offensive coaching game. Okay, if the offense stinks with Kevin, Dorsey, and Reese calling plays, then clearly it's, I mean, to me anyway, clearly it's the offensive talent. However, combine that with three different play callers, well, of course it is. Of course it is. I think. You?
Yeah, I just don't think the talent's there. I don't think it matters who's going to call the plays. And maybe they catch a spark because they have a new play caller. Maybe there's a spark that's there. Could happen. But is that, what does that spark mean? You're 2-6. Like, really? How much is it going to change things? Oh, suddenly. Look, if the offense starts putting up 25-plus points a game, I'm all in, man. They made the greatest move ever. But I still think the talent that Tommy's using is the same talent that Kevin used. And I don't expect anything to change.
Let me throw another weird thought at
you. It makes you wonder what Shador would look like if his back is okay. That's what it does. It adds more to that.
There's no basis in fact for this. I'm trying to get out anyway. I know you do.
Jeff Phelps speculates.
If you're going to trade David Njoku.
Okay. I don't know that that's happening, but go ahead.
Exactly. Yep. One of the big weapons for Tommy Reese when he was at Notre Dame was tight end Michael Mayer, who's with the Las Vegas Raiders and was a second-round pick.
Uh-huh.
And then the next year they took Brock Bowers in the first round. And Mayer completely backed up, and he missed a lot of time last year. He had some issues that he was away from the team for a long time, never really disclosed. You want to trade Njoku? Okay. You want to get another tight end in here so you have your two tight end set? There's just a guy with a background with Tommy Reese. Something to think about there. Rob is in Streetsboro, home of those Rockets. What's up, Rob?
Hey, doing good. They won their first playoff game, but reason why I'm calling, I'm excited about Stefanski giving up the play calling. I think that could be a step forward. That and our wide receiver with Cedric Tillman coming back. You think about it, he was our top receiver the first two games of the year before he got hurt.
It helps.
So I think that may help. And, hey, go Browns. Hopefully we can turn things around with those two things coming back, you know?
All right, Rob. I hope you're right. I'm glad Cedric Tillman's back. Andy, think about this. Trade deadline tomorrow, 4 o'clock. We've heard some rumblings about wide receivers. Who knows? Andrew Berry, I think, has made his best trades in picking up wide receivers. Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy. Those were both good trades, even though Judy's not been anybody's Hall of Famer since he's been here. I think Jerry is still a competent NFL wide receiver. If you could add a pretty good wide receiver at the trade deadline to Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, Isaiah, then the young guys you're bringing along, Bond, Thrash, Corley, you could add somebody pretty good. That changes things a lot there, doesn't it?
It does. It definitely does.
So that would, because if you get Tillman back, I think Sed's a good young player, and I'm anxious to see what more he can do. And if you could bring in somebody with a track record who's pretty good, even a guy like Jacoby Myers, who is with the Raiders and has said all along, do you want to get traded still? Oh, yeah. he wants out.
Yeah, I still think that they believe in Bond, and that if Bond can benefit from the change in play callers, well,
he played under Tommy Reese in Alabama.
Yeah, so maybe that'll make him more comfortable. Maybe that'll change things. Maybe he'll be able to contribute more.
Maybe he knows how to get the ball to Isaiah Bond. Because he did it before.
Or you were a big fan of Malachi Corley in that last game. Just give him the ball and let him run.
Malachi's had one touch in the last game.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly think there are some guys here who are intriguing enough that I'd like to see him get the ball more. But, man, if you could go out and get one of those guys who are rumored out there on the, you know, as potential trade targets, I don't know how you don't. I think you do. 216-474-0092, your new play caller, folks, is Tommy Reese. What's that mean? What's that do for you? It's Baskin and Phelps here on the Fan.
That can read down the field. That can read and be able to make the decisions that need to be made. So maybe one play is a little bit more than 3 seconds, and maybe one play is three plays or four plays, depending on how the progression goes for the quarterback. But if the quarterback opts not to go after the first read or first progression after that, then isn't the play on the quarterback in the first place or in the second place? Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be convoluted on it.
I just think you
need to be really smart to be a quarterback in the NFL, because you could have the greatest play caller on earth, and if it's busted within the first 3 seconds because the defensive end is in your face and ready to eat you for lunch, then you have to make the decision. And the only thing going through your mind is, do I eat it, do I throw it out of bounds, or do I try to crawl out of this thing and try to find somebody downfield? And most quarterbacks want to try to crawl out of it to make something happen. It takes a special quarterback to be able to throw it away and live to see another day, because every quarterback is an alpha dog and they all think they can make miracles happen.
All I know is that teams that have really good quarterback play and some pretty good wide receivers and a little bit of a running game always seem to have offensive coordinators who are highly thought of.
That's crazy talk, Jeff.
Sure is.
Crazy talk.
Sure is. Mike is in Orlando, Florida. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Good afternoon, man. How are we today?
Wonderfully. We are a Monday after no game yesterday. That's
bye week.
We are.
We're refreshed.
That's right. Hey, I listened to the same press conference as everybody else did. Now, did Kevin Stefanski say when he was going to relinquish the play calling duties, did he not say something to the effect of, but I'll be there, I'll help him, I'll mentor him a lot and help him make these decisions, see how things are going out on the field? Anyway, that's the way I interpreted it, which means to me then that we're just going to hear Kevin Stefanski through Tommy Rees.
Which, I don't know. Which is kind of, though, Mike, I mean, he is the head coach. But I right. would, if Kevin wanted that, he's just going to keep calling the plays. I would think we get a little different look at things.
Okay. I was just wondering which way we're going to go and what we're all going to see on Sunday. You know, I'm quite disappointed this year. Last year, the year before, the year before that.
Mike, thank you. I would think it, there's a little bit of a difference, Andy. Now, the success, I don't know. Again, I think it's more predicated on the talent you have than the plays you're calling. If you're really good, if your offensive line is a bunch of monsters, and you have a decent running back, you can call about any running play and you're going to gain yards, aren't you?
True. I mean, that's an easy one. If you're an offensive coordinator and you want to run the ball, that's you got three options, right? You're either going to run the ball to your wide receiver. I mean, well, you can do that. Yeah, that's one of your other options. Bring a wide receiver around or an end.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's the Afternoon Drive with Nick Wilson and Jonathan Peterlin on Cleveland's Sports Radio, 92.3 The Fan.
And welcome on in. It is Afternoon Drive. Jonathan Peterlin, Jake Volnick with you guys on this afternoon. We have Mac Robinson on the board.
Yes!
Jake Murren doing everything with YouTube and producing and all those fine things. Hope everyone is enjoying their Monday. Jake, how are we doing today?
We're doing pretty good. I woke up excited today. I don't know why. He's ready to go back to work.
Tell me why. Is that it? Well, yeah, if you had, we had a Saturday, Sunday. You and I typically do the pregame shows on Sunday, and so it was a little bit of a different vibe over the weekend, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's honestly what it was. It was just a change in the schedule, a reset where I had the one extra day off.
Yeah.
And I think that was all it was. And I was like, oh, I feel like I haven't been at work in a while. I need to go back now.
That is funny. I had that same thought too earlier, like a half hour ago. I was like, I feel like I haven't been here in a really long time, which is insane because I'm here 6 days out of the week. And for me to have then 2 days where I'm not here, it's like, wait a second. What is this foreign place? The Halley Building? Did I get lost coming here? Like, no, everything is fine. In a weekend where I had way too much candy, and now today on Monday, I've decided I'm not eating candy anymore. So we'll see how long that lasts.
Anymore? At all? Period?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's cold turkey, but it's the way that most people do things cold turkey, where it's like, it's not a real forever quit. And if I happen to see like a good Hershey bar later on, it might even just snap that right then and there too. But we'll see how far it goes and how long it goes.
Yeah, I'm really bad at that. So I am the type of person that I will never go out and buy myself any type of candy or anything like
that. That's a good rule.
Like,
yeah.
Grocery store, everywhere. Like, I have no inclination to be like, oh, maybe I should go get a bag of Twix. No, doesn't happen.
Okay.
But when it's put in front of me, I mean, it's like, it's a free for all. Like, I'll just be sitting at my desk and it'll just be piece after piece. Next thing I know, I have 15 wrappers in my desk. I'm like, and now I need to stop.
Very few Twix bars out and about this Halloween weekend. When I raided my daughter's, she's 2.5, so she did the greatest job ever. No, but she still went house to house. Not too many Twix bars. Like it's sad display. Not too many Twix bars. Not a single York peppermint patty. I won't buy York peppermint patties, but I love York peppermint patties. Like little candies like that that you don't even crackle is another one that like always pop up in Halloween, and that just they were all absent. It felt like everything was peanut M&Ms, regular M&Ms, Hershey's, Sour Patch Kids, and that was really about it.
Well, that's a disappointing development.
I know you like the variety. Like, yeah, the fun thing is the variety, which means I think maybe I went too basic. And so now moving forward, I have to veer into being one of those guys that gets the obscure, like Necco wafers or something like that, that you only get them when it pops up at Halloween and no one is actually buying these things. All right, Jake, we have big news today, though.
We do.
And we've got a lot to get into today. We got Daryl Ryder joining us a little bit later on. Nathan Zagura's at 5 today, 5 o'clock for Nathan Zagura. Big news of the day, though. Kevin Stefanski announced he's turned the play calling over to offensive coordinator Tommy Rees. My first blush reaction to this, Jake, when you do it 2 years in a row, I have a real hard time thinking that then next year you can take back the play calling duty and then think that everyone's just going to be copacetic with that. But I think this is a pure reflection to an offense that has been awful and no other really way to slice it and dice it, just has not performed. But how much of this do you feel like is a reflection of what you saw with Joe Flacco thriving in Cincinnati?
I don't really know that it's anything, because I sit here and I'm like, okay, well, if it's going to change from Kevin to Tommy Rees, like, I just don't really know what's going to change by actually switching up the plays that are being called. Still the same playbook. Still everything's, I haven't looked at it and been like, oh, I wonder why the Browns are running in this situation and not passing, or why a screenplay was called. Like, there are moments like that, but it's not what's holding back.
We did that with Dylan Gabriel when he dropped back 58 times. Like, maybe Tommy Rees wouldn't have that in his pocketbook.
I mean, I guess that's fair. I just, most of the times it's not situational. It's usually the entirety of the offense that I look at, and I'm like, this just has no way of working at all right now. Like, the pieces don't work.
The pieces might not work, but watching Joe Flacco play the way that he did yesterday and continuing to play the way that he did, first person to have over 450 yards throwing in a game with his age attached to it. First 450-yard game of Joe Flacco's career. The man's been in the league for 18 seasons, and he was, and it wasn't just, there were two touchdown passes to guys not named Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, okay? It just wasn't those two guys, even though that obviously is a part of it. And I wonder if this is Stefanski having his aha moment. Not necessarily because the Browns offense was so bad, but because Joe Flacco was able to be in Cincinnati and able to thrive as quickly and as meticulously as he's been able to. Like, it feels like one of those things where you can't run from it being anything but you being part of the problem when you see Joe Flacco go out and have that amount of success.
Yeah, I mean, I see that end of it. A lot of it to me is just, and I think Miles said this earlier on this year, where it was like, Joe, as weird as it was to see him succeed in 2023 and then come here and do it in a very similar offense, it's also not the offense set up for Joe Flacco to succeed in his current state. Like, Joe going there, yes, it went from, it looked like he's washed, he's not washed, but it's not like all of a sudden he's ripping off 25-yard runs and looks mobile. It's they spread out the field. Cincinnati has a very passive offense.
He's actually throwing the ball.
Yeah.
His ADOT was at a 5 when he was with the Browns. That was the lowest in the NFL, and now it's through the roof once again. And like, these are the obvious layups that these teams, at least it seems like the Browns, missed. How is Joe Flacco throwing the ball 5 yards at an attempt and making that what his bread and butter is when he can do it? And when we watched in preseason, all the takeaway that anyone had is, oh, Joe's arm is still awesome. Joe can still just throw it a million yards down the field.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw that last year with the Colts. We saw that 2 years ago with the Browns. It's like, yeah, okay, Joe can sling it. Like, he is a gunslinger, and you let him throw the ball down the field. You let him read the field as an 18-year veteran. Like, you just let him go out there and play the game, and it feels like the Browns went the complete opposite way, where it was, okay, Joe, we're not going to turn the ball over. We're going to play this ultimately safe. We're going to rely on the run game. And it's like, yeah, I mean, if everything works out perfectly, that might be the best way to operate the offense in general. But as long as Joe Flacco's back there, that's never going to be the best way to operate the offense.
So I look at that as a pure reflection of Stefanski. I don't know who else to call that as far as a reflection of. Like, that game plan, that script, whatever you think that is, where it limits and it puts these golden handcuffs on Joe Flacco, that's a reflection of Stefanski. And so this might be just the admission and watching Flacco do it in a different spot of like, oh, maybe I don't have the right idea. I've said a couple weeks ago, I think Stefanski's brain is fried. I think it's just cooked right now. I think he's so scared to throw the ball down the field. I think he wants to do the check down Charlie nonsense, and I think he thinks it's the only way that he can win. And maybe that's a lack of belief in the players. Maybe it's a lack of belief in the quarterback. Call it whatever you want, but he's not calling these games right. And to have someone like Joe Flacco be able to pull it off within days of when you were within this roster and on this roster, that's got to be alarming. Like, the sirens have got to be... they got to be going off in Stefanski's mind. And I if it didn't play a part into it, I'd be shocked. He'll never admit it. We're never going to get that admission that anything that Joe Flacco did impacted this decision in any sort of way. But if it didn't, I'd be shocked, Jake.
Yeah, but it's okay. So if I sit here and I go, okay, well, Stefanski's just broken, which means the scheme that he's running is also kind of broken, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's relying on it so heavily. We've seen multiple quarterbacks where it hasn't worked. Guys like Joe where it makes sense when it doesn't work. And guys like Dylan where... it kind of doesn't make sense when it doesn't work. Like, that's what he's set up for, to the point where if you're the X's and O's guy and this is what you do and you're not the type of coach that people are going to go run through a wall for, if you give up play calling in back-to-back years and this was supposed to be the, we go back to the Stefanski scheme and the scheme's going to carry it all, what are you doing here? Like, it feels like this is sort of the nail in the coffin for Kevin of, I give up play calling again. I'm admitting that what I do well, which is calling plays and having a scheme that works, isn't working right now. It's a question of, what are you providing? If you're giving that up twice, there's clearly a lack of confidence in yourself that even you do that right now.
So it's interesting. I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. Is this the nail in the coffin for Kevin Stefanski when you give up play calling for the second straight year? What's interesting is there was some discourse online. I saw some people making the claim that this is his way of keeping his job, as if he's trying to make this move in thinking about long-term gains and keeping up everything that he needs to. I'm with you on this one. Like, to me, it reads about as cooked gets. But when he gave it up last year to Ken Dorsey, like, Part of the admission there, I thought that Stefanski was making, is that he thought the offense was never going to do anything, and he wanted to basically rub the stink off of himself. He didn't want to attach himself to that bad of an offense, so he could still keep this "I'm a wizard" type reputation that he has. And I wonder if this is the same thing. Like, there's not a realistic expectation for Tommy Rees to thrive here, is there?
No, I mean, there's almost none, but this is the thing. Like, when he did it last year with Ken Dorsey, it was a lot of ways a Ken Dorsey-style offense. Like, Kevin was outside of his element. Like, I mean, we both talked to Coach Ray.
They tried to make it really towards Deshaun Watson and his strengths as well. Yeah, and then he got injured, so it was what it was.
We both talked to Coach Ray. Coach Ray will always say, like, as a coach, you only know what you know, right? And that's why with the scheme, Kevin knows all the counters to his own offense. He knows what the counter move to those counters are and where you have to go. Like, when you give it up in that sense, it was, okay, well, maybe Kevin's just not comfortable running the offense. And let it go onto Ken Dorsey's shoulder. If you're not comfortable with the play calling, maybe Ken is. And you do get yourself away from this offense if it is just flat out bad. When it's your own scheme, it's like, okay, well, this is everything you wanted to do. And you and Tommy built this thing together, but it's mostly Kevin's offense. And when Kevin can't get it right, it's like, I don't think you get to wipe that stink away from yourself. It's your offense.
Yeah.
You built this thing from the ground up for the last X amount of years dating prior to Cleveland, and now it can't work.
Well, but so is it a Hail Mary attempt to try to get it to work? Or because if it works, then it also is a poor reflection of Stefanski as well. You see, he almost has himself in a lose-lose here. You know, like I always tell people like yourself in sports arguments, you want to try to make it so that you end up in a win-win situation. So that either way, no matter I always put myself in lose-lose situations. I need to make that abundantly clear. I'd love to put myself in more win-win situations. But like you want to put it where you can make an argument where you can win either way, right? That's usually a good way to operate within yourself. In this instance, it almost feels like Stefanski's got to lose-lose. Because if the offense ends up being good, then that's a poor reflection of Stefanski being broke, as we talk about. And if the offense just flat-out stinks, it's not like anyone's going to turn around and be like, oh, I guess nobody could have done it with this offense. Not when Tommy Rees is a first-time offensive coordinator and is basically a baby as far as the profession is concerned. Like this is, in many ways, a lose-lose for Stefanski.
Yeah, I don't know where you go from here where it actually fixes itself. Like, what does Kevin do that makes this a win for himself? I can't find it. Like, either way, like you said, it's a lose-lose. It looks bad on Kevin. I don't know. He's not a CEO. That's not what he does. Like, he's not the type of guy that can just move pieces and parts around. He's cycled through offensive coordinators, both probably of his own choice and not of his own choice. But he's had a bunch of different guys in his system, moved everything around, and the offense is still the part that has not worked here.
Our favorite Browns reporter is at it again. That coming up at 9:20. Because our favorite Browns reporter is not Jason Lloyd, because he covers everything. And he joins us on the Fan Hotline. He's on The Athletic. He's from The Athletic. He's also, you hear him on The Fan working with us when one of us are out. Hello, Jason.
Hi, boys.
Who ordered the code red?
That scene
wouldn't have worked if Jack Nicholson just laughed at him.
Well, the fact that you even... First of all, you have to ask that and then lead with that is part of what I keep saying is the larger issue facing the Browns. Like the fact that every decision that comes down, and it's fair, you have to ask, well, whose decision was this? Was this the owner? Was this the GM? Was this the head coach acting on his own accord? Like that's what drives me crazy about the Browns. I have no idea who ordered it. I wouldn't be shocked if someone strongly encouraged Kevin to give it up. I wouldn't be, I was a little bit surprised that it happened. I was, it's the easy thing to do, right? When an offense isn't working is, fans call in and scream at you guys, give up the play calling, and people in the media scream, give up the play calling, but rarely does it happen. And I can't recall, tell me if I'm wrong. I can't recall it ever happening 2 years in a row.
I didn't think he would do it again. I was shocked yesterday. I did not think he, like, I heard him say it and I just thought, I was like, he's just saying it to say it. I did not think he'd really give a play calling.
Can you recall this happening two consecutive seasons with a head coach?
Did Sirianni do it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I'm asking maybe 2 out of 3 years or,
I don't know. And obviously he survived it, not only survived on Super Bowl. But it's so unusual. It's so unusual. And last year, you could kind of make the case that, like, I wasn't sure that I believed that he did it on his own accord. But I did, like, it is a logical excuse to say, hey, I need to go be a head coach because there were little fires all over the place. Defense was not playing well last year. Special teams was a catastrophe. everything was a mess. And it's like, okay, you know what? I need to go be a head coach. And you could buy that. This year, it is only the offense. Like, the special teams has had blurbs here and there. The defense is fine. Defense is playing well. It is the offense. And it feels like the head coach throwing his hands up and saying, maybe someone else can figure this out. I maintain it's a lack of talent more than anything else. There's just no talent on this offense outside of Judkins, who's a rookie. But we'll see. You know, it's a huge opportunity for Tommy. It's a great opportunity for Tommy. He's already had head coaching interviews with the North Carolina. And, you know, they kind of had to give him he earned it, but promote him to OC or else lose him to another staff last year. So, you know, if he comes in and turns this around and actually gets production out of this offense, it really sets him up well to take another leap next year.
Yeah, I said a week ago, like, if they weren't going to give him the play calling duties, then why was he hired here? Like, what was the point of bringing him
in? Because you had to get rid of Ken Dorsey.
Yeah, sure.
That's why. And you didn't want to lose him. Like, he's a bright offensive mind. Obviously, he's very well respected. Nick brought him to Alabama. It was a coup when the Browns got him. It was kind of a like, wow, that's a pretty good get.
A coup? I think maybe Clay Kubiak would have been a coup had they have been able to get him.
A coup.
Well, you know, I mean, go back and look. He was one of those bright young offensive minds, hot candidate on the coaching levels, and it was a good get for them to bring him onto that staff. And in order for them to keep him this year, they were going to have to give him the OC job.
All right, Jason Lloyd with us right now. So are we looking at the last week of Dylan Gabriel as the quarterback of the Browns?
I don't know. I tend to say no, but I do think Shador is going to play at some point. I don't know that we're there yet. I just don't think that we are. I think that they're going to keep running Dylan out there, barring injury or total collapse and catastrophe. I mean, yeah, obviously it hasn't looked good, obviously. You know, I thought his best game was his first game, and I thought it's progressively not that that was, I mean, you and I argued about that at the time about the Minnesota game, but what he's done since, you know, I just think that he's regressed, not progressed in the weeks that followed, but it's still only a handful of games. And I think that they're going to keep running him out there.
Really?
We got a lot of season left. Where do you go next? If you bench Dylan now and you go to Shador and that doesn't work, you give that 4 or 5 games and that doesn't work, you still got a month of football.
Well, if he's not practicing, he didn't practice yesterday, so I imagine he's not probably going to be active Sunday.
I think there's going to be a 30 for 30 on this Shador season with the Browns.
It's what do you mean by that? What do you know? What do you know? What did you just walk into? You tell us what you know right now.
No, I mean, come on. There's obviously a lot going on behind the scenes. I think that's pretty evident. Like, I don't think you have to be a crack reporter to figure that out.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Like, I just think that there's a lot there.
So when is he going to play?
I don't know. I do think he'll play. Like, you know, kept around this
line. That's not an answer. Come on. When do you think he's going to play?
I don't know. December?
Is
can we get to the behind the scenes thing? I'm kind of more interested in that. Yeah, to be honest,
I'm trying,
Jason,
to get because, to it, but I
because
can't
he
just
has
ask
been.
It.
No, you're. I'm not. No, listen,
well, here's why. Hold on, Jason. He is somebody. I think it's very cool that he'll go to these high schools. He's gone to some local colleges. You see him kind of throwing with guys. I don't even know if that constitutes extra work, but you know he's been out in the community. I think he's been, you know, showing off Cleveland. In a cool way, right? But when you say there's stuff going on behind the scenes,
well, don't run away with this. I'm just saying, like, the fact that he's as high profile as he is, that they take him where they take him, that there's been this jostling of him on the depth chart. Now there's this back injury. Like, there's just a lot of noise, and that's part of the Shador experience. There's just a lot of noise all the time.
Do guys with back injuries typically fly across the country when they're rehabbing?
That's what I'm saying.
That struck me as odd. I got to be honest. I don't hear a lot of that. Normally, that's not an ideal situation.
Well, it was good for him to get away. It was good for him to go see his family, especially rookies going through this for the first time. Obviously, it's been a struggle for him just in terms of how he thought his NFL career was going to go a year ago at this time and how it's actually gone. If guys are really hurt, usually they keep them at the facility to rehab. I shouldn't say usually. I've heard of it happening quite often.
Well, can't you take a Saturday off?
Sure.
I know. You're making too much sense. That's not what he wants. That's not what he wants. He wants you to tell him that he's not taking the job. I know what Anthony wants. He wants you, Jason, to tell him that he's not taking the job very seriously, not taking the opportunity very seriously. That's what Anthony wants. See, he's not denying what I'm saying.
It's the bye week. Like, let the kid go see his family.
Go see his father.
They all do it.
Tone.
Yes.
Like, oh, yeah. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that at all.
It's not a big deal. That's part of it. It's not a big deal.
Wait a minute. Sorry, Jason. Mm-hmm. You just said that. Is it typical for guys? I know how you ask questions. Mm-hmm. I know how the wizard works. You asked, is it typical for people to fly across the country with a back injury?
Yeah.
That's what you said. So I know what you were aiming at when you asked Jason that question. Jason knows what you were aiming at. Don't sit there and play patsy with him.
I thought it was very cool that he surprised. Remember, he had that video on Twitch that we played, some of the audio. With him talking about how it was important for him to stay in town, to be big ready at any time. And then that threw his dad off, I'm sure. And then he surprised him. That was a great homecoming. And then then they got their asses killed in Boulder.
Just let the kid go see his family.
You know, I was at Jason's dad's funeral.
You were.
I had to go use the bathroom. So I told Joe Varden to tell you I'd send my regards and I had to get the hell out of there.
There was about 300 people in line.
I had no idea your dad was such a popular figure. I would have showed up way earlier. It was unbelievable. I showed up. I go, what is this? Is there a high school graduation going on next to it or something? They were directing traffic. It was unbelievable. I had no idea Jason's dad is the most beloved person in Lorain County history. Anyway.
Well, I pulled Tad Carper and Sarah Jamison out of line. I should have done that with you. I don't think I saw you.
The best move Dan Coughlin ever did when his wife passed away is he started walking through the line and getting people. He's like, this is running too long. We got to get people out of here. This is such a great idea. I told Liz, if there's actually people at mine, you got to do that. You got to do
great.
That. Anyway, back on track. You're talking about things that are passing away, the Browns season. Jason Lloyd joins us from The Athletic. So, this is what I think bothers everybody. And, you know, this is what I hate. I got to tell you, Jason, is look, okay, I've called you the Culligan man and I've made a lot of jokes about you carrying water for Kevin. But I also think that this goes both ways. You know, I look at what Kevin does and I go, okay, now what's Tommy Rees going to do? I don't think he's any sort of magician and your ingredients are still your ingredients. So is he going to turn this wide receiver group into, you know, Alvin Harper and Michael Irvin? Like, no.
No.
No. So I'm expecting more of the same, just with a different coat of paint.
And that's why I was a little bit surprised that Kevin made the decision. But who knows? Maybe we'll all be surprised. Maybe there is something to get out of this. I've run the numbers out before. They are among the slowest receiving group in the NFL. They don't create separation. They don't catch passes. They don't catch contested passes, and they drop first downs. They lead the league and drop first downs. I don't know how changing play callers will change any of that. Plus, they've got a rookie third-round quarterback who has struggled badly. So I don't know how changing the play caller changes all that. But, you know, I mean, listen, if the Browns come out here and Dylan throws for 300 yards and they hang 30 points on the Jets, we're going to have a pretty interesting conversation next week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I expect that to happen, but if it does, is that an indictment on Kevin? Yeah, you could certainly make that case. Like the Flacco thing, everyone throwing their hands up and screaming about Flacco. I'm like, well, what would his numbers be if he was throwing to Isaiah Bond and Cedric Tillman? What would his numbers be in Cincinnati? The fact that he sees Jamar Chase on the field and he could be triple teamed and he's just going to throw it up there and know that he's targeted him 42 times over 2 weeks. Like, is this really an intricate offense or is this a veteran quarterback knowing where the best receiver in the NFL is and I'm just going to throw it to him and let him go?
All right, Lloyd, let's get to what's left then. If the receivers are having those kind of issues, I do think the offensive line stepped up in terms of the at least protecting Dylan Gabriel last game. Is there something to build on there?
No.
No. Okay.
Not at the tackle spot, no. I mean, I said it all year. The offensive line is kind of a crisis mode, is it not? Like the fact that you don't have any of these guys under contract for next year. I mean, if you think Whipler's ready – okay, there's your center. He's been here for however many years.
That's one.
He better be ready. Yeah, that's one. Joel more than likely is going to retire, so you got to fill that. Zach Zinner can't even get dressed on Sunday. He was supposed to be that guy ready
to go. What's going on there?
That's what's going on.
He's just bad? Nothing.
Yeah.
How?
It's been a massive disappointment.
How?
And I wondered, I don't know.
He was really good in college, like right before the injury. He was like, I don't want to say elite, but damn, he was really good.
That was the one that you thought, okay, they got something here. Like, never even a question that he could bust as a guard. Like, it's easier for tackles to bust than guards. He just hasn't worked. And, like, they had obviously that terrible line coaching last year. Mike Vrabel became the de facto offensive line coach by week two or three or whatever it was. They obviously made the change. I thought, okay, let's give another chance. Maybe it's just rookie struggles. I don't know if there's any lingering effect of the injury. Didn't work with the line coach. It could be a variety of reasons as to why. But the fact that he still can't get on the field is alarming. Like, that's really troubling. And I just, from poking around and talking to people, it's kind of head shakes, like, it's bad. So he tried him last year in some spots, and I think he played in there was that stretch where they played NFC East teams that had really good defensive tackles, and he basically got mauled. And again, you think, okay, well, he's going against really good defensive tackles, maybe, and it just hasn't worked. So, you know, I made the case earlier, you might have to bring Wyatt Teller back. I kind of thought this might be Wyatt's last year, but you might have to bring him back. Do you want to bring Jack Conklin back? He can't stay healthy.
No.
DeJuan Jones, every season ends with surgery before the season's over. How can you count on him for a spot? So you're right there, you're going to need two tackles. There's just a lot of holes on that offensive line. We haven't even got to the receiver and the quarterback and all that. So this whole off, they were never going to fill all their spots in one draft, all their holes with one draft. But yeah, there are still, like, I look at left tackle, quarterback, receiver. Those are, you need number one picks. You would like, ideally, I would think, number one picks for those three spots. And you've got two picks next year for three spots. And if you need to bundle the two to move up to get a quarterback, although that may not be necessary with how poorly this is going, hopefully they'll still have two number one picks next year to use. But there's a lot of holes that they're going to have to address. And the offensive line is to me is really, really concerning. We spend so much time talking about everything else. You're going to have to draft the tackles more than likely. I know they got lucky on the Teller trade. They traded, what'd they trade? Like Dorsey traded like 2/5, I think, to get Wyatt or something like that. And they stumbled into a Pro Bowl guard after the guard they drafted. I forget that guy's name. Austin Corbett. After that didn't work.
He ended up being okay, Austin Corbett, but not Wyatt Teller.
And that's why, like, you kind of hold out hope for Zinter that maybe something will click because he was such a good college player. But 2 years in, it's just not there yet.
Jason, as an aside, has baseball eclipsed the NBA?
No, I don't think so. I think it was, I know the numbers were tremendous because the series was tremendous, but I don't think that the sport, and I love baseball, by the way, like that's my number. I love baseball, but I still think NBA is number two. There's a work stoppage more than likely coming in baseball soon that will probably hurt in terms of popularity and crowds and all that. So I still think NBA is two, but that was a tremendous, tremendous series.
All righty. Jason, thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Talk again.
Yeah. Bye. Jason Lloyd, The Athletic, on the Fan Hotline. Yeah, I'm not going to take that bait that you're laying down. I ain't going to do it. I'm just letting you know that right now. I got 40 minutes left to go in the show, and it ain't going to happen. So if you want to keep trying to bait me about the Shador stuff, it ain't going to happen. Okay?
It was Jason. He says there's behind-the-scenes stuff going on, wouldn't elaborate. What's the behind-the-scenes stuff?
I don't know. I don't think it's a great idea to speculate. What do you think of that?
Do you think Shador's people want him playing in this situation?
Oh, now, for the love of God.
Now new offensive coordinator, no receivers, offensive line shaky.
You don't think we should speculate in sports talk radio? That's the whole gig, Ken.
Tommy Reese coming up in about 15 minutes. As Jeff Thomas just said, we will hear from the man who will be calling the plays for the Browns. And I just want to hear what he has to say. He's a young guy. He's 33 years old. He's highly thought of. You've heard his name thrown out for college head coaching positions recently. And you can be sure at some point he will be a head coach, but he played quarterback at Notre Dame. He worked at Notre Dame for a very long time. He worked for two coaches there. He worked for Brian Kelly, who wanted to take him to LSU. But Tommy stayed at Notre Dame and then worked for Marcus Freeman and then went to Alabama and called plays for Nick Saban in Nick Saban's last year as head coach of the Crimson Tide. Still a phenomenal nickname.
It's a good resume.
Well, I just want our fans to know, you know,
no,
who the guy is here.
No, it's an impressive resume. I'm not joking. We have these mic flags if you're looking. You can see the
it
clip.
It just fell off. That's all right. There you go. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Good job.
Coffee on.
So Tommy, you know, Tommy's on the fast track to becoming a head coach in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're an offensive coordinator in the NFL and you have success and you're in your 30s, you're going to get hired.
What do you think, Jeff? I don't know that we've ever gone through this. What was your reaction the other day, truthfully? Or maybe you've had a little, because we did talk about it, but now you've had a little time to settle in. What does it mean that Tommy Rees is calling plays now?
I'm slightly torn over it, to be honest with you. I don't think this team has enough offensive talent that anybody is going to do a phenomenal job of calling the plays. And so if he does a similar type of job to what Kevin Stefanski did, then okay, then that screams, you know, it screams that there's not enough talent here. If he can change the thinking a little bit, well, maybe that'll help. You know, maybe that will help. I think this is, and you know, I think Kevin has done a very solid job of calling plays. When Kevin had skill position talent to work with, I think he did a nice job. I know some people disagree with that. I think he did. So you can yell at me for my opinion, but it's just my opinion. But this I don't get. And you can say, and as I mentioned to Andrew Siciliano moments ago, game flow can have a big part to do with that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my answer to that, like we were talking about, you know, what he was going to do there,
yeah,
is just, I don't think there's going to be a significant change in what we're seeing from the offense unless, and one of the things might be bad, if Gabriel starts throwing picks, then that might mean they're trying to be a little bit more aggressive with Rees as the play caller. Or that they're telling him that he can be a little bit more free range and take some more chances that maybe he didn't do before. That's to me, that might be one thing. Or, because I don't suddenly think what Gabriel sees or doesn't see downfield is going to change. And again, your play caller is only good for about 3 seconds. And once that 3 seconds hits, your quarterback is scrambling or trying to figure out something to salvage a play. So I'm not expecting significant changes from the offense on Sunday just because Tommy Rees is calling the plays.
Well, I hope we see one.
I do too, and, but and I just don't see it. I don't see that happening.
That's what I wanted to bring up, and I mentioned this to Andrew. And I understand the Browns have been down in some games and game flow and everything else. The Browns have thrown more passes per game than any team in the NFL, folks. More passes per game than any team in the NFL. I mean, come on, man. You haven't had terrific quarterback play this year, whether it was Joe or whether it's been Dylan. Your wide receiving crew has not shown an ability to make a lot of plays, and yet you're throwing 37.8 passes per game. You're throwing more passes than any team in the NFL. And you don't have a standout quarterback, and you don't have standout receivers. And yet you're throwing like crazy. You're 25th in rushing attempts per game at 23.8. And we think that you can run the ball better than you have. And I've heard it come out of Joel Bitonio's mouth. We heard it come out of Jack Conklin. Offensive linemen like to run block. And it's like, hey, if it doesn't succeed, you keep doing it and you wear them down and you pound on the other team. That's the way offensive linemen want to play. You drafted a running back to pound on the other team. You know, you didn't just draft a little scat back guy. You drafted a beast in Quinshon Judkins. And he's played well. He's run it pretty well, Andy. And yet you're 25th in rushing attempts and first in passes per game. That's the one thing where I think Kevin Stefanski, I don't know if he lost himself this year. I don't know. That's the only thing about the play calling this year that I would think has been bad. And it's and here's the thing. If you do that, if you throw more passes than anybody per game and it works, great. It doesn't work. They're not scoring any points. I mean, you're trying to throw like crazy and you're not scoring any points. What's that tell you? It tells you it hasn't worked.
Or they're not throwing to the right guys?
Well, they don't have the right guys. That's the problem. They don't have the right guys. So why are you throwing more than any team in the NFL? And that's what I hope Tommy can just bring it back to the center. Bring the passes down, bring the rushes up. It's pretty simple. And give your offensive linemen a chance to go out and make some plays in the run game.
Yeah, it was funny because when you started saying that most pass attempts, I was actually thinking about the Cavs game last night, where I think the Cavs take more 3-point attempts than anybody in the league. I was close. Only the Celtics take more in that scenario. And it's just like you're trying to create offense. I don't care what sport it is there. And the Browns are just having a difficult time doing it, especially to their wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be super honest. The percentage of positive offensive plays coming through the passing game is going to the tight ends. Or, I mean, you might as well use the running backs in that scenario too. Because if you're, I mean, there's something wrong with the fact that you're throwing all those passes, as you said, and yet you just don't have any synergy with your wide receivers. Maybe Tillman changes that. Maybe Judy steps it up, but we're halfway through the season. It's like, okay, how about, and even if it was just, you know, two games or three games where we saw, you know, electric stuff from Judy, but someone's got to throw in the ball. So
there's a story out on SI.com headline, Tommy Rees is suddenly the fall guy for the Cleveland Browns offense. Sorry, I think that's absurd.
Well, does that go back to me saying that Kevin could be washing his hands of the offense to say that there's no, again.
Yeah, but Tommy Rees isn't going to be the fall guy. Offense has stunk. No. So if it continues to stink, it just shows you that they need better talent on the offense.
But if it stinks, it sometimes.
If it gets better,
to me and you, all the Browns fans, we can see that. When you're looking, though, it's like they gave up 44 points to the Ravens earlier this year, right? And we're like, how that Browns defense? Everyone talks about them being so good. How do they give up 44 points? Well, you know as well as I do that when the other team's defense scores against you, that's points. And when you look at the box score at the end of the day, you're blaming the defense for saying they gave up all those points when you know it's not true. When you throw an interception inside your own red zone and the other team only has to go 13 yards to score a touchdown. Are you really blaming that on the defense? That they were said, hey, hold them to one first down here so they don't score so we can make you look good. It's all perception. And the perception, Jeff, does not shock me that someone would write a story saying that if the Browns can't get anything done at the end of the season offensively, blame Tommy Rees. Blame the offensive coordinator.
But I think that's hogwash.
Hogwash because we know what's going on. Yeah. And people listening to our show know what's going on when you watch the Browns.
The Browns
if you're sitting in Portland or anywhere out west and you're like, oh, that offense still stinks. Must be on the offensive coordinator.
Dylan Gabriel's a rookie, obviously. We know that. I don't think that Kevin's done, and the entire offense has been not good, but I don't think Kevin's done him any favors. Let me play a quick game. Dano, you in? Andy, you in?
I'm in.
Who has thrown more passes per game, Dylan Gabriel or Patrick Mahomes? Just
Gabriel. Yeah.
It's Mahomes, but by less than one.
Okay.
Who's thrown more passes per game, Dylan Gabriel or Baker Mayfield?
Gabriel.
It's Gabriel.
Yeah.
By about one per game.
Okay.
Drake May leads the NFL in completion percentage. He's like 74%. Who's thrown more passes per game, Dylan Gabriel or Drake May of the Patriots?
Gabriel.
That's correct. Yeah. And Drake May is throwing under 29 passes per game. Let's get Dylan Gabriel down somewhere between 25 and 29 passes per game. And give him a chance to have a running game that makes a defense pay attention to the run game. And that makes it easier for him to throw the football, in theory.
When your offense is in the gutter, what are the different levers that you can pull from the outside looking in?
Well, you can change positions. Right. Yeah, you can change players.
Change a quarterback.
Or you can change philosophy. Wide receiver. You can change philosophy a little bit. And well, that's what I think has to change with Tommy Rees.
Agreed. They got to change the play caller. I Mary Kay laid it out really well in her piece about a week ago during the bye week of why he needs to give it up. I'm kind of with you. I think it's just time. Just because you need to yank every lever at this point. You need to go try a new brain, a new idea, a new way of adaption, a new scheme. Maybe not scheme, but more like schematic idea, if you're following what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this kind of makes sense. I don't think it's Kevin Stefanski distancing himself or anything. I don't think it's Kevin Stefanski setting up a fall guy. I think it's just Kevin Stefanski going, we got to do something because we can't keep puttering along and hoping for the best. Right now, you're a car driving on four flat tires hoping for the best. At least inflate two of them.
I agree. And
But Fannin and Judkins are... You have two tires.
Yeah, but dude, that's a tight end who's been good.
Mm-hmm. Not great. He's coming along.
He hasn't been.
Didn't he just win an award last week?
He hasn't been Jimmy Graham. He hasn't been Travis Kelce in his prime.
It's not Brock Bowers.
He hasn't been Brock Bowers. He hasn't been Antonio Gates in
his prime. He's coming along, which is just great. That's fine. Just great.
And that's not a slam on him either.
No, of course not.
I think for a lot of people, it just isn't clear cut and dry, Jake. That's the point. Like, there's a lot of different angles to this. I think we've thrown out 37 of them already throughout today's show. A lot of different angles. But also, it's very confusing if you're Stefanski as to why you would do this right now. Obviously, he's trying to get a spark going of some sorts. But if, in fact, Tommy Rees makes this offense hum and makes it look much better, well, that's not really a good sign for Stefanski either.
No, like, hey, this is what makes it so confusing is every scenario where we talk about where the Browns get better from this move actually just makes it worse from Kevin. And with the Browns get worse from this move or stay the same also looks really bad for Kevin. It's like, I were you expecting him to give up play calling at all this year?
No, not at all. Yeah, no, because I'm convinced it's what he loves to do more than anything else. And I'm also convinced it's what he thinks he's great at. And so that's the part that is a little odd. And it's also odd because he did it last year. I mean, he really made me look stupid last year when he gave up the play calling. I went on a whole, it might have been a month worth of rants about the idea that he just thinks he's awesome at this. He thinks he's great at this and he'll never give it up because of that. Boy, did he make me look like an idiot. It's not that I thought he learned from that. I genuinely do think that he looks at this and says to himself, instead of firing Bubba Ventrone and that being your pound of flesh, this is what I'll do. Meanwhile, I don't think the fans' reaction has been nearly what he thinks it is. Like, I think he expected people to be like, oh, Stefanski, wow, you gave up play calling duty. Like, you really, you're taking a look in the mirror. Like, you're evaluating this, and that's, wow, that's good. Meanwhile, I think most people's reaction has been like what Daryl gave us at 320. Okay. All right. It's not going to change anything, but if that's what you want to do, then okay. It's more shoulder shrug than it is anything else.
Well, because I think when you give up play calling, the idea is that there are situational moments that are costing your team the game where it feels like you're constantly making the wrong decision, right? Where it's like games down the line. We were joking about Pete Carroll, like you run the ball on the 1 yard line, right? You give up play calling, you run the ball on the 1 yard line. Very simple. You give up play calling for moments like that. When you just look around and the entire offense is shot, it's like, it doesn't matter if you call on anybody to call the plays. You can put anybody in there. If the talent's not there, it's not there. And if the scheme doesn't work, the scheme doesn't work. Doesn't matter if, you know, your zone left run is called by Kevin Stefanski, Jim Schwartz, Tommy Rees, Jimmy Haslam. It doesn't matter. That play's not going to work if the right players aren't in place and the scheme itself doesn't work.
Well, and I think that's why Stefanski's cool with just giving it up. Because I think he recognizes that. I think he looks at it and says, okay, Jesus Christ, that quarterback isn't fixing this. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's out there. We're still going to struggle because the personnel isn't there. And so in many ways, he just passes the buck to Tommy Rees. And if I'm Tommy Rees, you're just happy for the opportunity, but it's not. It's very similar to the conversations we have with putting Shador out there. It's like, are you really setting that guy up for success in the meanwhile? And that answer is clearly no.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, you look at the offense struggle, and I do think a lot of it is like personnel based. You don't have enough, but this was also going back to the Stefanski scheme, but mixing in a lot of the philosophy of Tommy Rees and, you know, making slight adjustments to that offense, which also clearly haven't worked. Like, is Tommy Rees really going to be back here next year, even if Kevin is the head coach? I'm not saying Tommy deserves to be fired, but if it didn't work, it didn't work. You might just go in a different direction anyway.
It might be the UCLA head coach.
Who knows? I mean, his name's been popped up multiple times in college already.
Yeah, and at UCLA, too, oddly enough. I think he was like fourth on the betting market for that. It's like, where did that come from? 216-474-0092, Steve in Lakewood. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. I have a little bit of a different perspective on this that maybe hasn't been mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
One, let's start with the notion that Tommy Rees was on the staff last year, and of all the people Stefanski could use the offensive coordinator, he chose Tommy, which tells us that he is of the same kind of mindset. Now, you would take a quarterback that you're trying to groom for years to come, and you would want to play him, especially in a down year, to get him reps. Could this not be possibly the fact that Tommy Rees was hired with the intentions that he would eventually call plays and Stefanski would be an overseer? Could this not be that situation there where this, knowing we're not doing much this year, and get a spark, let's get Tommy, as well as a quarterback of the future, some reps and figure out, and we can all grow together. Stefanski's not getting fired. I don't think Tommy Rees is going to get another job, especially with this offense's stats this year. He's not going to shine to get a better job somewhere else. So could it not just be that we're grooming our offensive coordinator simultaneously while we're trying to build up the rest of the team?
Only hang up in that, Steve, and I appreciate the call. Only hang up in that. The only fly in the ointment that I can tell, if Tommy Rees is actually really good at this and the offense does look markedly better, that's a bad sign for Stefanski. And so because of that, then Stefanski is in a roundabout way, he is jeopardizing. If his long-term plan is, I'm going to grow Tommy Rees with the idea that the next year I take back the play calling and Tommy Rees remains my OC, and this is almost a carrot of sorts in order to basically a little crumb to make him feel like he's doing a, you know, getting some reps and having a better experience, and then he stays with us. Only problem is if Tommy Rees knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, or the idea that then Tommy keeps the play calling and could very well just be gone this year anyway if somebody really likes what he's doing.
Also could be in play, too. If he just absolutely kills it, then Tommy Rees is all of a sudden the head coach of the Titans as the next wunderkind, and it just is what it is.
Right, like, that's why, in a lot of ways, I don't think is... Like, as a head coach, I think you know your coordinators, like, especially when you hire young coordinators. They do very well. They're probably going to move on. They're going to move up the ranks. But if you're just trying to, like, oh, let's build up our offensive coordinator so that he'll be here for years... That guy's not going to be there for years. Like, that guy is going to get poached very quickly if he's actually doing that great of a job. So I don't love the idea of trying to develop a coordinator and trying to make it all work at once, because most likely scenarios that guy gets pulled away from your staff immediately.
Yeah, no doubt. We could have coach on coach crime here. Are you ready for it?
Yep.
Coach D in Maple Heights. Coach, what are you a coach of?
So I am a high school coach. I'm going to not name the school right now because I just want to talk about the Browns.
Calling from Maple Heights. Do we have any guesses, Jake? Do we?
No, it's not Maple Heights.
Okay. That's what the coach in Maple Heights would say.
So, guys, first of all, thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about Mr. Stefanski, and I have a few things to point out here that maybe we're not thinking about. We always talk about his, first of all, that he won Coach of the Year for 2 years. Well, let's talk about those 2 years that he won Coach of the Year. And we went to the playoffs. The first one, we beat Pittsburgh. He wasn't there. Then we go on to Kansas City, and Mahomes get hurt, and we can't close out the game. We were close enough. We can't scheme up anything to close out Kansas City without Mahomes. That's 1 year. Let's fast forward to the next year he won Coach of the Year. We had five quarterbacks. Flacco takes us to the playoffs. We go to play the Texans. I was at that game in Houston, by the way. We go to play the Texans, and we just beat them a few weeks earlier, blow them out. Come back a few weeks later, we get blown out in the same stadium by the same team, the exact same situation. We get completely out-schemed and out-coached in that game. I was very upset flying back to Cleveland, first of all. Now, and we like to say, we like to point out those 2 years to say, this man deserves to stay here. He's doing a great job. In my opinion, I've called in on another show, and I said that he struggles with top-tier talent. Maybe I was incorrect in saying top-tier talent. What I should have said is he struggles with personalities. Anytime we've had personalities on our offense, he can't either scheme them, he can't get along with them. Something goes awry. I don't know if it's the front office. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the players. We can point to Odell. We can point to Jarvis.
Yeah, but Coach, right now, I agree with that sentiment, but right now, it's not like he's got big personalities in offense at the moment.
No. I agree. He has his offensive struggles right now, but I'm just looking at the overall 6 years. when he has had talent, did he make them better or did they struggle with him? Did they struggle in his offense? Did anyone come in here that was already an NFL player and get better in Stefanski's offense? Did anyone come in here, you know, leave Stefanski's offense and get better in another system? We've got to kind of start looking at what is he doing when we do get talent in here. Maybe it's not top tier, but when it's a personality, which most of the best players in football have, you know, pretty maybe wiry personalities. We've got to have a coach that can manage that if we want to get good in Cleveland. We can't keep depending on guys like Bailey Zappe. Nothing against Dillon Gabriel. He's a great guy, but he's not going to make the other 10 run through a wall for him. He's just not that guy. Maybe he will be able to manage and, you know, make the right throws here and there, but he's not a guy that has a personality that's going to make the other 10 play better.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm worried about with Stefanski. Is he that guy to push it? If you don't have the quarterback, do you have the coach to do it? If you don't have the coach, then the quarterback has to do it on the offense. But every guy we've had with a personality has struggled in his offense.
No complaints there. Coach D, I appreciate you.
Always another coach, but thank you guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Coach. Yeah, no, he's not wrong. I think it's different for this season. Now, you can make big personality. Maybe you want to say Jerry Jeudy is the big personality on the offense. But Jerry, since he's been here, it's not what he was when he was in Denver, and it felt like an incident was popping up every other week. Like, this is a very calm version of Jerry Jeudy. I don't see the problems or any of the incidents that pop up. Like in Denver, it felt like every other week he was getting in a Twitter fight with people. I don't even follow him on Twitter these days. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's different. But they don't have the big personalities right now like they used to.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, and I'll draw back on like the fact that it's the scheme, and a lot of guys want touches. A lot of guys just want to be able to get the ball into their hands because your best players want to be playmakers, and that's not what Stefanski does. Like, I think that's part of the problem, and it constantly stems back to that. It's like, there's times where that works, but even look at like a Shanahan where the scheme is just great.
Mm-hmm.
It works because it's great because Shanahan consistently gets the balls to his best players, and he gets a quarterback that doesn't have to be that guy, but just has to distribute it to those best players. That's why the scheme works. He puts great players around an okay quarterback and allows those guys to elevate the rest of the offense. That's Shanahan.
Like, yeah.
Kevin does a lot of the opposite, where we talk about Jeudy having two targets. Maybe your best player on offense right now. Like, he has to touch the ball. He's certainly the best in the wide receiver room. He has to touch the ball, and you have to, in one way, give your team the best chance to win by doing that, but also keep those guys happy and invested in the game, because you can say, I don't know about Isaiah Bond's personality, doesn't talk very much, but like, I'm sure he wants the ball, and we see him giving up on some routes, and we see him constantly in the wrong place. It's like he feels less invested, probably because he's not touching the football.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the superstar that came here and then was a million times better than what we've seen before. Like, Jarvis Landry was a million-time Pro Bowler in Miami before he came here.
Right.
It's not as if he got that much better. Odell, you can argue, got much worse being here. Kareem Hunt was better in Kansas City the first go-round than what he was here, and you can argue might even be better in the second go-round in Kansas City than what he is here now. Amari Cooper was a million-time Pro Bowler in Dallas, and it's not like he elevated his game to a higher level while here. It was still very productive.
Yeah.
But like, the point remains is that I don't know that obviously there's people that were drafted here, and that's a different story, but the people that came here while having success previously, if he got him to elevate to another level, and Jerry Jeudy might be the only one you can come up with, but he's come back down to earth so much this season that I think it almost gets taken away.
Yeah, and I mean, you're also throwing the ball 45 plus times a game when Jerry Jeudy was having success, which didn't help either.
Quickly, Mike Hall Jr. is out here tweeting, and he's saying trade ... you're just younger than I am. I'm 36. I feel like sometimes I speak for the younger people in life only because I stay informed with like not like 6'7". That's not what I'm talking about, guys, but I feel like, I don't know, is it wrong to say I have a connection to like the 23, 24, 25 year old in some way?
I mean, I don't necessarily, there's plenty of us who work here, so I would say that's a fair connection.
Maybe, don't know.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we feel like we keep you up to date with a lot of the Twitter stuff, probably around here.
Like Jax had me spending, like 3 hours yesterday on whatnot, trying to win golf gear. And I'm like, that's not something I should typically be doing. But there I was. And it basically, it's like a live auction version of eBay. The thing's wild. Anyway, the point being, when it comes to evaluating what trade ... means for Mike Hall Jr., what did you come up with?
I mean, I don't necessarily think it means anything directly involved with Mike. Like, this is something that you probably get news or word from the team that maybe something's happening. You hear a rumbling.
Is he trying to be Woj? Is he trying to be Rap Sheet?
No, I think he's trying to generate a little bit of buzz.
He's trying to break news?
I think it's more just so like, hey, keep your eyes open and people are going to react to that tweet and you're going to get a lot of engagement on it, more so than it's like actually something big happening. Like, this could very well be.
All right, Matt, give me your secret.
I think it's something else that he might have heard from somebody. Like,
you think Shelby Harris is gone?
I could see Shelby. With it being a veteran, especially with where the Browns are at, I could see it being somebody like Shelby Harris that is gone.
Well, Shelby Harris should be expected to be traded this deadline.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, he should be. So, and if this ends up being a Shelby Harris trade, I don't love the clout chasing that Mike Hall Jr. is on right now, if that's the case.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Like, do you really tweet about Shelby leaving? I feel like if you're going to make that tweet and want people to have their eyes open, it would be something coming in, not something leaving.
Also kind of funny, though, if he just knows that this is going to get people talking a little bit and he's just like, trade, dot, dot, dot. Nothing else to do with it. Just
wouldn't it be funny if it's dot, like dot, dot? One of his like lower ranking Ohio State teammates that got traded for like a seventh rounder?
Yeah,
and it's just like, just heard it. I mean,
well, and it's also somebody that's going to a team that aren't even related to the Browns. It's like, well, I told you something was coming. Something was obviously happening. People are losing their minds on Twitter about this. It's like, guys, it'll be all right. But the expectation, if it's Shelby Harris, like Mac thinks it is, we can live with that. That'll be fine.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.